The Ireland-Portugal Business Network is comprised of more than 200 member companies based in Portugal and Ireland. These companies are from a wide range of industries and professions and represent in excess of 25,000 people.
Hello, everybody. So we are just going to run kind of an unstructured conversation and encouraging everybody to contribute their thoughts, to get involved.
So we're from Braga, next stop for the next conference, by the way. So the idea is to have a conversation based on consumer and the responsibility of us as consumers towards the environment. I will be focusing a little bit on textiles because that's my area and one of the most polluting ones, and also on social innovation in terms of social inclusion and integration as well.
Yeah, so my name is Elsa, as mentioned, I'm from Ireland. So I have the CEO of an Irish headquartered startup. I'll be focusing more on the diversity, equity, and inclusion side because I think one of the things that happens a lot is people talk about sustainability and forget that sustainability is so much more than just the environmental element. We also need to look at the social and corporate governance. If you look at the UN Sustainable Development Goals, some are specifically focused on reducing inequality and things around like decent work and opportunities for all.
Basically, what we spoke before is to have a common ground or on at least two sustainable goals. One is number 12, in terms of consumption, in terms of production, responsible consumption and production, and also the 17, which has to do with partnerships for attaining these goals. And that's basically why we're here, and that's basically why I would love to speak to the two of you after it's finished regarding the partnerships, because we have to find common goals between all the organizations and us as individuals as well, because organizations are made by people, so we need to talk to each other and to try to find most of the solutions together. So that's what we will try to do in this 30 minutes, I think, that we have. And to disclose a couple of things that we do. If we talk, should I start with this
thing?
Okay, so keeping it short in terms of who's Sylvia, so I'm a trained economist, and I'm going to speak about consumption reduction, so that's going to be fun. I'm a passionate marketeer, but most of all, I'm a very, very passionate social entrepreneur. And all of this based on textiles, like I say, so I'm going to run a couple of numbers that most of you haven't probably realized every time you go shopping. I don't know, for instance, one of them, very common, I don't know if you know, but for instance, to produce a very simple t-shirt, 2,700 liters of water are used. I don't know if most of you knew that. If you want to make it worse, a single pair of jeans takes 11,000 liters of water to be produced, so that's also an interesting number. There is a Chinese brand, a fast fashion Chinese brand, that is currently launching 7,200 new items every day on their website. Also a shocking number. And for instance, 100,000 million new fashion pieces are being launched every year. So that's also a huge number for us to think. And 20% of the ocean pollution is caused by the textile industry. So most of us probably won't know, but that's the reality. And that's something that we really, as individuals, need to try and reduce that. We won't talk about eliminate because that's would be you to be talking, but at least reduce it. There is an interesting measure taken by the French government just this week. They're going to impose penalties on fast fashion brands. So basically, every piece may be penalized with an amount of 10 euros maximum or 50% of its value before taxes, meaning that if you buy a t-shirt of 3 euros, you may end up paying 13. And this is to, encourage consumers to actually think about what they're doing, what they're buying, and producers, And on top of that, and this is going to be a big blow, which is they're going to prohibit the publicity on social media to the press. So all that, let's say, invasion that we have on our channels is going to be very, very effective. So this is something that the governments are starting to regulate, and in this case, France has started to do that, to, you know, launch at least a discussion that we need to do about what we're doing in terms of consumption. So, to you.
Okay, I'm going to throw some numbers maybe at you as well. So just I think before I can start, I think a lot of people might not know what we generally say diversity, equity, and inclusion, so maybe I'll just briefly introduce what that means. So diversity depends per country. So in Ireland, for example, we have 9 recognized diversity groups, but humans in general, we're all diverse. We all have had different lived experiences. We all have things that impact our ability, you know, applying to the workplace specifically to access and to find, you know, meaningful work. Inclusion, you may have a diverse workplace. That doesn't necessarily mean you'll have an inclusive workplace. There's a massive difference between those. And we have a lot of data that shows that diverse workplaces don't do as well as inclusive ones. So if you have an inclusive workplace, and I hate to make it about the money, but sometimes you do need to, you know, equate to the business case, you'll make 2.5 times more per employee if you have an inclusive workplace. And we have some numbers out there in terms of there's $1 trillion lost in the US economy every year because of a lack of inclusion, and $450 million in Europe. And then the equity piece is the one that's really interesting. It's recognizing that as humans, we don't all start from the same starting place. I came from a background in working in neurodiversity for a long time in inclusive education, and not everyone gets the same access to education. So I guess why is this important? There is sustainable development goals specifically focused on this. And then the other area is the EU corporate, because we're in Europe, the EU corporate sustainability reporting directive, you will need to collect and report on how you are doing as an organization. So I think, yeah, those are the main things. And I think, okay, you know now it's important, and you are in an organization, it's like, what do you do next? Like, what as an organization can you do to be more inclusive, to be more diverse? And generally what we know is you need your leaders to believe that this is important. So if you look at organizational change, 75% of your leadership need to be bought in to have any type of organizational change in your company. And really, when you look at sustainability as a whole, whether you're talking about diversity and inclusion, you're talking about environmental, human rights, corporate governance, it is really at its core behavior change and organizational change, and it should be treated as such. Sylvia, I think I've been talking for long enough there.
So, like you said, this is sustainability is not just a business strategy. I mean, I consider it the business strategy. Because if businesses or organizations overlook that, it will be very difficult to thrive. Because sustainability is not just about solar panels or electric vehicles, because some organizations go like, okay, I do this and that, but it's not enough. It's not just that. It's about the people, once again. So that's what we try to do in a very short scale, but, you know, just try to inspire others to do other similar paths with Restore. That's basically what we're doing. We're trying to, through social inclusion, through the sustainability in terms of upcycling textiles, in this case, because we are all aware of the importance of the textile industry in Portugal. And up in the north, you know, it's very short, you know, kilometers between the three big centers like Guimarães, Barcelos, and Famalicão. That's where everything is situated. And it's easy, I would say, for us to have a cluster on this and to, you know, become very aware of what we need to do and how to move forward with this. Restore is exactly doing that. We're going to factories and, you know, collecting the waste from these factories and try, most of all, to have some interesting discussions with the producers with the industry to see how they're managing and how they actually see in the future how to approach this problem, because some of it is a problem, some of it are actual opportunities, and that's what also the industry is doing, is taking a lot of opportunities out of these threats in terms of waste management. Then we have this social inclusion part, because that's the other part of Restore. So we basically try to work with people that are different in terms of, and have different opportunities that sometimes are disregarded by the community, which is, we're talking about people like in social institutions that we work with. We're also working with active aging, which is something that society really needs to talk about, because in some cases this is something that is being overlooked as well, and they have so much to give, so much to teach, so much to pass on to other generations, and sometimes we're not actually giving due importance to that. We're also working in a very interesting project now with a prison establishment in Guimarães, and the results are just amazing on what we're doing. So Restore, being a small company, but we're trying once again to build an ecosystem around people, for the people, let's call it like that, and to also engage and inspire others, you know, to transform the products of today and transform them into the resources of tomorrow. And it is possible. It's just, you know, putting creativity, efforts, and of course also resources and knowledge, and, you know, getting involved in with universities, with local governments most of all as well, and policies as well, to make it happen. So that's basically the kind of effort we're doing on the ground and making it happen.
Great, so yeah, I think one of the things that myself and Sylvia have had a chance to connect before this call, and one of the things, two things I think that came out of it that we're very aligned on, that I think are a good message to kind of share with people. The first is around creating opportunities, as Sylvia mentioned, like what they're doing at Restore in terms of creating opportunities for people who may not be able to access employment opportunities. And that's something that, you know, I don't know the demographic of the people here today, but if you are in a leadership position, looking at your organization, how can you create meaningful employment opportunities? Not just employment opportunities, because one of the big issues that comes out of diversity and inclusion research is underemployment, particularly, you know, I mentioned neurodiversity before, but people with disabilities being underemployed and not being able to reach their full potential in the workplace. So thinking about how your organization can create opportunities for people who may not be able to access those opportunities. And then I think the other thing we were kind of aligned on is that one of the issues sometimes in sustainability is that it can be like exclusive for smaller businesses with less resources, because if you look at, you know, consultants or a lot of technology solutions out there at the moment, they're very unaffordable for SME, you know, small businesses or nonprofits. So it's thinking about how can sustainability be accessible to people who might not have the budgets of, you know, large enterprise organizations as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Sometimes I play with the fact and I say, okay, sometimes to be sustainable we have to donate a kidney or something. Because it's really, I mean, if you go to some fashion stores, once again, me more on the textile part, okay, if you want to buy a sweater or a nice t-shirt that says, okay, 100% recycled yarn or 50%, you look at the price and okay, I want to be sustainable, I want to be planet friendly, but not like this. Because there's a lot of greenwashing, as we know, and a lot of green marketing or so supposed marketing that is also influencing that. But it's actually killing the purpose. For instance, with Restore, we're doing exactly the opposite, which is making it in a way that you're buying a product that is completely environmental friendly due to the upcycling approach, also socially inclusive because of what we do with our social partners, and affordable. And it is possible also to make money on that, monetize it, the, you know, the business model, but make it affordable so that people can actually say, okay, I have a feel-good sensation when I buy a product and I wear it and I use it, and it's you know, reliable, because that's also important to make as a value proposition, but it's affordable. you can is accessible to the public. And that's also very important in terms of sustainable issues, because we cannot afford to pass on the message that being sustainable is only for an elite, like we were saying, because otherwise the whole purpose of us discussing what sustainability is, what organizations should be doing, and us as consumers, because we are responsible for what we do, not only at home, also at work, with our children and all that, is to pass on that message that every drop counts. I think that was said before. Every drop counts. In terms of Restore, it's our drop. For instance, we have been able in 3.5 years to actually upcycle 6.3 tons of fabrics and accessories, and we have been able to pay more than 58,000 euros to the social partners that work with us. It is a drop, but it's our drop. And if we didn't exist, that wouldn't be there. So it's the message that we also want to put forward today, is that we should go home, or, you know, just when we go out of here, it's like, what drop can I actually add to this ocean of change? Because transformation is really needed, and that's one of the challenges that probably we could leave to the audience, is like what we're going to do once you leave that door, and in terms of change and in this sustainability wave.
Yeah, I'll just briefly tell you a little bit about what we do. So Euro-Org, as I mentioned, is an Irish headquartered company. We do two core things. One is we have technology that allows organizations to pull all their diversity, equity, and inclusion data and then based on their data makes recommendations and goals. We spent about 8 months talking to diversity, equity, inclusion professionals from small businesses to NASA, like throughout the world, and we found they were all having basically the same issue, which they were doing a lot of manual work. So they were, you know, downloading data from loads of different places and then struggling to be able to generate reports and report on what they were doing, because, you know, when we speak to organizations of all sizes, everyone is trying to do something. I think most people are very, you know, well-intentioned, and then it's just about how do you share what you're doing. So that's one thing we do, and then the other thing we do is we do advisory work. So we wrote the first industry report in the biopharmaceutical sector in Ireland. We're currently working at EU level with the SETI sector, looking at how the sector can build diversity and inclusion. But I think because we only have a few minutes left, it would be great to maybe, does anyone have any questions, or does anyone even want to share their own experiences of the work that they're doing? Yeah.
I think, I don't know whether anybody's noticed it, but since the pandemic, the price of clothing has gone up exponentially. I mean, you only have to go around the shops. And the bad thing about it is the more quality stuff that was affordable like 10 years ago is now really expensive. I mean, the stuff that hasn't got polyester and nylon in it. And even the sort of mixed fiber stuff has gone up in price. And I really love your idea. I think it's fantastic what you're doing. But I'm just wondering, you know, can the industry shift towards making quality, natural fibre clothing that isn't thrown away after one season, that will be more sustainable for everybody, realistically, and make a profit? Because I think we're an exception rather than the rule, and I don't see it happening in the textile industry.
Well, thank you for the question. There are actually very good examples happening in terms of upcycling and actual recycling, and I'm very proud as a Portuguese to say that we are in the very forefront of innovation in that sense of becoming more sustainable in terms of approach. It is true what you said, and there's a lot of supply and demand working both especially in the cotton, in the yarn. There's actually a specialist here from Guimarães right there that will be able to give a better answer than me. But that's a lot of speculation also going on in some of the let's say, the economic movements that are going on. We cannot explain as well, because it's just, whereas before you could count on a cycle, now it's just going like that, according to a lot of so-called causes, okay? Regarding the quality of clothes, that's exactly what I spoke before. Like, you do have like some brands that actually have that in their value proposition, but you do have a lot of brands that are targeting especially young consumers and telling them it's okay for you to buy this for 2 or 3 euros, and if it's not okay, just put it aside. The only thing is they don't realize that putting aside means that every second that we're talking here, one truck full of clothes is being dumped somewhere in South America or Africa. Because in Portuguese, you know, we have the saying, longe do coração, right? Exactly. So it's exactly this. I mean, as long as I don't see it. And then there's another thing that says, okay, I've done something good today. I went to my closet, I took everything that I don't own, and I just donated to charity. Oh, I feel so good. I'm sorry, I'm going to use the word crap. Because that's not the solution. Because I'm just, you know, putting it forward as a problem. What about the chair? I mean, do they really need that? Is it adequate to the people that they have, that they have in their charity issues? What are they going to do? Some people just come to me and say, Sylvia, we have a warehouse full of clothes that we don't know what to do. Because people just come here and they think that we're their dump. So we have to change that, and we have to be more responsible. We have to think, like I said before, every time you go and buy a t-shirt, just think of the amount of water that in there. Do I really need another t-shirt? Do I really need another pair of jeans? Start looking for secondhand options that are brilliant. Start looking for companies that actually do things in terms of recycling and upcycling. So I am an exception, yes, but luckily there are so many exceptions like us in the world now. And being a Portuguese, like I said, I'm very proud that we are so innovative in this area as well. So thank you for the question.
Yeah, we have time for one more question.
Hi, I'm Rachel Margaret. Just to add a bit more clarification there, you mentioned diversity versus inclusion. So I'd like if you could maybe talk around that. And Sylvia, you also mentioned the textiles being socially inclusive, and I didn't understand that either. Thanks.
Can I just add and say, I think that Portugal has some of the best secondhand shopping of any country I've been in, so that's just one thing to add. So diversity and inclusion, it's a really good question because I think it's people tend to see them as being the same. So there is an emerging area of science called diversity science, where it comes a lot from things like conflict theory and social science research. And diversity is, I don't know how many people we have in the room here, we're all different, okay? We may, you know, some may be from Portugal, some from Ireland, some from other places. You know, some people may be neurodivergent, we're all different ages, different ethnicities. Diversity is how we see ourselves and our lived experience. And in the workplace, it depends country to country how that's measured. Generally, we're complying with employment law. So for example, in Ireland, there's 9 recognized diversity groups. So those are the areas you really seem to be discriminated on. Whereas in the US, for example, veteran status is seen as being a diversity. Inclusion is feeling like you can go into the workplace and be authentically yourself. And I think we have in the past come from what we would call a standardized fit work approach, where we have this workplace culture and environment, and we, you know, behave in certain ways. And there's nothing wrong with companies kind of having values, or, you know, values particularly is a big thing in the tech sector, which we work with a lot, where they'll, you know, they'll have their values. There's nothing inherently wrong with that, but it's the idea that you can go in and no matter who you are, you feel like you can thrive and belong in the workplace. And just on the inclusion, the thing is, there's 2 parts to inclusion. One is belonging, so you feel like you belong. And the other one that people can sometimes forget about is the uniqueness. So what I'm saying is you can be uniquely yourself and go into work and feel like you're not going to be discriminated against, and that if you want to, for example, you know, be promoted, you can be promoted. So yes, does that answer your question?
Well, that's perfect, because we normally say that we work with unique people within their differences. So what Restore does as a socially inclusive brand. Basically, all our products are stitched by people, unique people within their differences. So, like the for instance, I give you a very, very short example. This last project we started with the prison establishment in Guimarães. They're going to produce our pet beds. We're going to start doing pet beds, so Restore Pet. They didn't know anything about stitching, zero. We went there with two training sessions, which is interesting. One of them was provided by my aunt, and another one was provided by a Syrian refugee that has been working with us for 3 years, and now he's becoming also a trainer, so he goes with me to this and train other people. And in less than a month, these four inmates that are part of this group and have become excellent in stitching, but most of all, they've recognized they have a chance. And they come to me on a Saturday afternoon when I go there to be with them and teach them and, you know, go through the things that need to be improved. And they humbly tell me, like, Sylvia, this is absolutely amazing for us because you could be with your family on a Saturday afternoon, but you're here with us. And most of all, we are really thankful because we know that once we get out, we have another skill that may help us to thrive when we go out. Because they say, we're here because, well, we have to be here. Like, okay, but we know we'll be out. And once we're out, we'll be equipped with other skills that we didn't have, and it's because of Restore. So that's the socially inclusive part of our brand, and that's what I call the emotional salary, and that's something that is absolutely amazing beyond the financial salary. I just wanted to leave just one last thing, which is I just came across with a really interesting quote from the founder of Patagonia, you know, the fashion brand as well, and he says, Earth is now our only shareholder. So I would like you to think about that and to once again think and reflect on what are you doing regarding that when after this small conversation. Okay, thank you so much.
This has been a production of the IPBN in partnership with Pink Room. For more information, visit us online at island-portugal.com and on LinkedIn at Island Portugal Business Network. For more IPBN podcasts, find us on Spotify or visit our website for the full list of episodes.